This is Spotlight on Lead Poisoning, brought to you by Southern United Neighborhoods, a nonprofit that works on environmental issues and helps people buy their own homes and fix their credit. Call them at 1-800-239-7379 or go on the web at southernunitedneighborhoods.org for more information. My name is Marie.
Can you just introduce yourself and where you work?
Sure. My name is Kimberly Terrell. I'm the Director of Community Outreach at Tulane Environmental Law Clinic.
And what do you do as an outreach person?
So I am the liaison between the community members and the attorneys that we have here. So I'm the first point of contact when people are seeking legal assistance on environmental issues. So they reach out to me, and I gather information, and I, you know, basically take that to the attorneys to see if it's the type of thing that we can provide assistance with. But then independently of that, I can work with communities directly to get them the information they need to help them figure out, you know, how to engage in environmental decision making, you know, where to find information, if there's a, you know, new industrial facility coming to your neighborhood, how to find out about that, how to comment on the record, how to do that effectively, how to, you know, interpret scientific information that they're getting about that project. So the idea is that the work that I do complements the work that the attorneys do, but I can also provide people with assistance, you know, even if the clinic can't provide legal assistance to them.
Yeah, because sometimes people don't necessarily need an attorney, right? They just need to know how to make their voice heard on a particular environmental issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes the issue is just that the entity making the decision doesn't have all the information. So sometimes it's just a matter of, you know, the community member getting the information and bringing it to the attention of the decision maker, and, you know, sometimes everybody is sort of on the same page, and once we kind of provide that information, we can get our end goals accomplished. So it really, you know, depends on the specific situation, but actually sometimes the non-legal options can be even more effective than the legal options.
Yeah, because sometimes the legal way, going to court takes a long time when you could just submit some comments and get maybe some traction on an issue, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So especially when it's an issue, you know, where people are being exposed to environmental contamination, you know, that's going to continue to happen while the whole court process develops. And sometimes it might be, you know, a short-term project, right? There might be, you know, maybe some construction or renovation or digging or something that the community is concerned might expose them to some kind of toxin. So, you know, if it's sort of a one-time event, then by the time it gets through the court system, that event may have already happened. So that, you know, that's another example of how sometimes the political solution and sort of the, you know, social advocacy solution might be more effective than the legal solution.
And sometimes people might not even understand what's going on, because sometimes you get a notice from DEQ in your email or something, this is happening, or you have any comments on this, and it's hard to understand these notices sometimes, right?
Yes, absolutely, and that's a big part of my job is helping people to sort of interpret that stuff and get comfortable and get familiar with it and know sort of where to look for the key information in the documents. Because even if you get notice of something, if you don't comment properly, your comment might not get included in the record. You know, if you get a notice about, you know, a new plant coming into your neighborhood and you write a comment and you send it in, but you don't reference, you know, the number of the application, the identification number, you know, they might not include your comment, and then that might all have you know, been for nothing. So there's some kind of, you know, there's sort of some basics that it's helpful to know when you're going into this stuff.
Yeah, because you don't want to get your comments thrown out on a technicality because you didn't understand the process, right?
Yes, absolutely. And the other, you know, the other big part of what I do is helping people get advanced notice of this stuff. Because especially for permits, the time frame that you can comment in is usually really short, right? So
yeah.
So if there's some kind of project in the works, you know, the project is usually in the works for years, right? Like a lot of this stuff doesn't happen quickly. But then, you know, the company will apply for their permit. It could be an air permit that would allow them to, you know, release a certain amount of air pollution. It could be a water permit. Whatever it is, they submit the application, and then the agency reviews it. And once the agency has sort of determined that the application is complete, that it has all, you know, the pieces that it's supposed to have, then it releases it for public comment, and usually that public comment period is a month or less. So, you know, you have to know that it's coming, and you have to find out about the public comment period relatively quickly, because it takes time to, you know, put your thoughts on paper and develop these comments and get them in. So the earlier you find out about this stuff, the better positioned you are to influence the decision.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times people sometimes come to us, I know, after the fact, right? Something's already happened and they didn't know this was happening, or they didn't get notice,
yeah.
Or they feel like they didn't get notice, and it's kind of hard because you're trying to, first of all, even understand what is going on and what kind of company it is and what do they do. So it's good that you're out there on the front end trying to make sure that people know what their rights are and that they should get notice and how to understand
yeah.
these notices, and so that next time they might be paying more attention or they might ask sooner about what's going on.
Absolutely. And that's probably the most common complaint that we hear from community members, is that they didn't find out about the project until it was too late to influence the decision. It takes some work to stay on top of this stuff. But, you know, a lot of the permits that we deal with are administered by the Department of Environmental Quality. So that's DEQ.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a Louisiana state agency. And so, for example, you can sign up to receive notices by email. So if you Google LDEQ public notices, it should be pretty easy to navigate to the site where you can kind of sign up for these notifications. And you can sign up for specific parishes, because otherwise you'll get overwhelmed with all the applications coming in across the state.
Oh, so, yeah, I did that where I signed up for almost everything. And you just get so many emails because every
yes.
day someone else is filing on another thing. And I know for especially a lot of the people we work with, they're very low income, so they depend on the organizations that they're a part of to sort of keep on the lookout via the email about what's going on, because they might not have internet access at their house, for example.
Yes.
So, you know, that's why it's helpful sometimes, and I know you work with a lot of organizations too, because they're the ones that are sort of working with the lower income families to find out what is going on in their communities.
Yes, and that can be a good way to stay on top of stuff is, you know, if you're plugged into an environmental organization. Here in New Orleans, we have, you know, several that are active, kind of depending on what you're interested in, right? Like if you're interested in climate change, there's 350 New Orleans. If you're interested in, you know, kind of general environmental issues, Sierra Club has a chapter that's active in New Orleans. And there's other, you know, statewide and local groups, but they can be really helpful in sort of, you know, keeping you updated on, you know, the big picture stuff. And where you can be valuable as a citizen is you're the person who's actually affected by this stuff, right? So, you know, Sierra Club, for example, has a lot of resources, and they're really good at catching, you know, environmental issues and not letting things slip by. But at the end of the day, if they're going to, you know, submit comments on something, they need to have members who are actually affected by this stuff, right? And so if you're, you know, a resident of a neighborhood that is, you know, at risk because of some kind of development or some kind of toxic contamination, your participation is really valuable because you basically, you know, if you're working with an organization, you can kind of give them some credibility, right? Because you're the person that's affected, and it's really important that, you know, who's ever making these comments, that they show that, you know, they or their members are somehow affected by this proposed activity.
Yeah, because the voices of the people that are directly impacted is really important, and sometimes that gets lost if you're just making general comments and not specific about how this is going to impact my life and my home and my family.
Yes, definitely.
So how did you come into the world of environmental law and working for the clinic?
I came here kind of indirectly. Mm-hmm. So my background is in conservation biology, which is basically studying nature so that you can protect nature.
Yeah.
And so I come from more of sort of a environmental science perspective. And what I came to realize over the years was that, you know, for protecting nature, the biggest problem is not that we need to do research or that we don't understand it. You know, we know a lot about the natural world. There's a lot we don't know, but the reason that, you know, the natural world is threatened is because of human behavior. And so, you know, if we're going to protect the natural places we love, we need to ultimately change human behavior. And so I started to feel like, you know, working with communities and working through the legal system is, you know, a more effective way to create positive change. And so about a year ago, I joined Tulane Environmental Law Clinic as the community outreach director. And kind of the benefit that I bring, too, is, like I said, I have a scientific background. So a lot of what I've been doing is, you know, helping communities sort of understand scientific reports and science information so that they can, you know, add that to their toolbox and make more sort of informed and specific comments on projects.
Yeah, I think that's so important because we deal with a lot of lead poisoning issues and stuff, and we have the scientists that we work with, and we have the data that says, yeah, children are being poisoned, there's lead in our water, and it's very important that the science is broken down in a way that the community members can understand what's going on so that they are empowered to take that information and be the ones to put pressure on their policymakers. And then, you know, if you need to know what the laws are, if you're going to pursue some kind of legal remedies on something. But I think it all works together. And so it's interesting that you said you come from that background, because that's what we found, is that the science has been invaluable to helping us, you know, organize community members on different environmental issues and feel empowered to have the knowledge, and here we have scientific evidence of such and such and such and such, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes it's also helpful in understanding the flaws or the shortcomings of the current system, right? So lead is a really good example. There's lots of things that can influence the amount of lead in your water. Even the temperature of the water can influence that. So, you know, if you're going to test somebody's water for lead, there are ways that you can do it where you would get lower amounts of lead, and there are ways that you can do it where you would get higher amounts of lead. So, you know, being able to sort of kind of assess the technical side of what's going on is really important, because from a community health perspective, you know, we would hope that these tests are as conservative as they can be. And, you know, for example, if you haven't used your water in a while and it's just sitting in the pipe all night, when you turn it on, it's going to have more lead in it, right? Because it's been basically marinating in a lead pipe all night. But if you run your faucet for 10 minutes and then take a sample, you're going to have lower lead concentrations. So it's, you know, it sort of is important to kind of have a grasp on some of this stuff, because it can help you identify problems with the way, you know, environmental reporting is currently being done.
And also, as a way to better protect your own health and that of your family, right, if you understand, I need to run my water maybe for a little bit before I use it first thing in the morning, because there's less toxin, you know, there's less lead in the water. You know, that just helps make you and your family healthier if you have this information.
Absolutely.
That people aren't necessarily, you know, out there. Public service announcement, run your water, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And understanding also the pathways of exposure, right? So lead is lead is not easily absorbed through the skin, right? So the way that we get lead poisoning is really that we ingest it, right? We either drink it or we eat it, you know. So for me, when I'm thinking about lead exposure just in my day-to-day operations at home, you know, I might take a bath in, you know, water with lead in it, and I'm sort of less concerned about that, right? Because I know it doesn't absorb through my skin. But if I'm making pasta, I'm sure to use filtered water for that, because I know that, you know, that's being soaked up into the pasta, and then I'm eating the pasta, and I know that, you know, ingestion is the primary means of exposure.
Yeah. And also, so, you know, if you're making that coffee first thing in the morning, you want to make sure it's filtered, or you at least run the water before you put it in that pot.
Yep, absolutely.
And so, well, I know there's a lot of environmental issues in New Orleans and in Louisiana, right? So you guys are probably pretty busy a lot.
Yes. So we, and I'm glad you brought that up, because we deal with a really broad suite of issues, right? We've been thinking about lead lately, because that's an issue that's come up, but we deal with all kinds of stuff, from industrial pollution to, you know, wetlands loss from residential or commercial developments. But ultimately, we don't have any kind of agenda of our own. We represent our clients on issues that they care about. And so we're what's called a public interest law clinic, and that simply means that we take on environmental cases that affect the public good. So if your neighbor is dumping used oil into your backyard and it's a kind of small thing and it's really only affecting you, that's not the type of case we would take on. But if they're dumping that into a creek and it's flowing, you know, into another creek and it's, you know, polluting a waterway, that's the type of thing that we do. And we by law, we cannot solicit clients. We have to wait for clients to sort of come to us on specific issues. So that's why it's important for people to know that we're here as a resource, and you can reach out to us with any issue. You know, we may or may not be able to help, but you know, never hesitate to reach out. And we provide free legal assistance. And the way we do that is we do it in conjunction with teaching. So the students are third-year law students, and they represent the clients, but they're supervised by licensed attorneys, licensed, experienced attorneys. So it's kind of a win-win because the students get, like, real-world, boots-on-the-ground, you know, skills, and communities get free legal representation.
Yeah, and sometimes maybe if the issue is small or not something you guys do, you'd be able to put them in touch with somebody who might be able to offer assistance, or you might know of some group over here that's working on the issue and they might want to hook up with them. And
yes, definitely. And we try to, you know, whoever reaches out to us, we try to give them, you know, at least something that they can move forward with, whether it's, you know, a name of another attorney that they might be, that they might want to reach out to, or like you said, an environmental group, or, you know, just some knowledge, some research, where to find information about the issue that they're interested in. So, you know, a lot of people reach out to us who are not interested in pursuing a lawsuit, right? Because we can provide a lot more help than just, you know, filing lawsuits.
Yeah. Do you find that more and more young people are being attracted to environmental law because of climate change being in the news more and more, and there being sort of a movement with young people rising up against climate change, or you haven't really noticed anything?
That's a good question. I would say that, you know, I feel like environmental law and sort of more broadly environmentalism has always been, you know, something that's been important to young people. But I think where we're seeing the biggest changes is in sort of the diversity of people interested in, you know, environmental issues and environmental law. So historically, the environmental movement was, you know, pretty limited to white people who were, you know, middle class or upper middle class, because the reality is, if, you know, if you're struggling to feed your family, it's hard to find the time, you know, to sort of engage in these sorts of, you know, movements when you're dealing with kind of day-to-day reality. But what we're seeing now is, you know, more people of color getting involved, more, you know, low-income folks getting involved. And I think part of that is greater awareness, but part of it is also that, you know, these are the people who are most affected in many cases, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, New Orleans is a perfect example. If you look at property values, the places that have the highest property values are generally those that are on higher ground, right? So that means the people in low-lying areas are generally lower income, and they're going to be more affected by flooding and therefore more affected by climate change. So I think as people are sort of starting to get aware of, you know, well, who are the people that are disproportionately affected by environmental issues, you know, those are the folks that are kind of starting to get more involved in environmental movements, and I think that is, you know, a tremendous strength to the, you know, to the environmental movement, because we need to be more diverse socioeconomically, culturally, and racially.
Yeah, and you can see that along St. James Parish and where they're fighting against the chemical plants that are coming in there. And it's pretty much all African Americans that are in that fight because they're impacted with it coming right into their neighborhood. And after decades, it's their family members that have died from cancer along the whole Cancer Alley corridor. And so I think it's very exciting how diverse the environmental fight is getting in Louisiana.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, it's what I find really inspiring about that example is that there's, you know, there's a very strong group of residents who are, you know, speaking out and voicing their environmental concerns, and they're working with allies from outside the community, you know. So a lot of these, you know, statewide or regional environmental groups can offer, you know, assistance and resources and knowledge, but at the end of the day, you're not going to make any change if the people who are there, you know, living in that community are not involved. So the, you know, the local residents have played a huge role in kind of shining the spotlight on those environmental concerns.
Yeah. And so if somebody wants to get in touch with the clinic or with you, how would they go about that?
So they can email me. The email is TELC. outreach@tulane.edu. So TELC is for Tulane Environmental Law Clinic. So it's TELC outreach@tulane.edu. And they can also call me. My number here is 504-865-5787. That's 865-577.
And you'll be happy to come out to their community meeting or talk with them over the phone about any environmental issue they might be concerned about in their community?
Yes, absolutely. And even if it's just, you know, they want me to come out and tell them more about how the clinic works and the kinds of issues we deal with, I'm happy to do that. So my job is to help people understand our clinic and what we do, and go to them and sort of be, you know, be seen within the community. So I'm happy to do that. I love it when people reach out. So please don't hesitate to reach out.
Yeah, I think it's great what you guys do, and it's very needed in our community. And it'll be good. The more people that know about it, the better.
Absolutely. Yes.
So thank you very much for talking with me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Marie, and thank you for all the great work that you do.
All right.
You have been listening to Spotlight on WAMF LP New Orleans on 90.3 FM and streaming at WAMF.org. A recording of this broadcast and subsequent broadcasts are available at SouthernUnitedNeighborhoods.org.